Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with three lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
I think it's really important to always be tethered to reality, right? I think that, you know, one of the things in this game that's super important is understanding where you are competitively and, you know, where you project. And, you know, hope isn't a business model. You know, you have to be tethered to the numbers and know, okay, this is the quality of our team right now. This is, if we spend money on these players, this is where we'll be. I mean, those are things where you're not going to share with the public all the time. I think exactly where we project ourselves, but I think it's incredibly important.
We're back with more Inside the Clubhouse with Bruce Levine and David Haugh on Sports Radio 670 The Score and 670thescore.com, presented by Bet Rivers Sportsbook.
David Haugh, Bruce Levine here, another hour talking baseball as we do every Saturday morning between 9 and 11. And that was Jed Hoyer, who was on the Parkins and Spiegel show on Wednesday. He also spoke to Cub reporters on Thursday. And Bruce, when I hear tethered to reality, I'm tethered to reality. And the reality is the Cubs' plan lacks clarity. It lacks transparency. And I think it's intentionally ambiguous. I don't think they know. I don't think they know what direction they're going to go yet. I think it's like having your navigation system or your app on your phone, and you plug it in, okay, destination playoffs, and it comes back with directions. Not sure how to get there yet because I don't know the Cubs know. But please, they need to pick a lane. I think it would help fans know. I think that transparency was one of the best things about the Theo Epstein regime. And maybe they're waiting for a clue. Maybe they're waiting for a sign. But if they can spend next offseason the way that you're suggesting and they are still trying to get rid of Wilson Contreras, that's a mixed message. And those are different directions, I think, in terms of action. So tethered to reality, the reality is the Cubs don't know what direction they're headed, or at least it seems that way. If they do, they're keeping it to themselves.
Yeah, you use the unfortunate term, I believe, David, which you're entitled to get rid of. I don't know if that's really the angle they're taking with Wilson Contreras. If they were, quote-unquote, getting rid of him, I think it would have happened before the beginning of the season here. I think what Hoyer talked about when he talked to a group of reporters, including myself, on Thursday, was the fact that they wanted to see how Wilson Contreras responded to this year. They wanted to see, how he dealt with, being in a walk year, how he would be a teammate of, a good teammate. And he's been a great teammate with the people that he's embraced from this new Cub team. So from all of that, I think it was a test to see whether or not they want to spend money on a 30-year-old, next year 31-year-old catcher for 4 or 5 years. I'll answer that question with a question to you, David. What would be a fair contract if you were David Haugh, president and top baseball man for the Chicago Cubs, to give Wilson Contreras, knowing your situation and where you're at organization-wise right now?
Well, to put a number on it would require kind of looking at the marketplace. And if you're talking about a contract worth $14 to $15 million per year, does that seem fair in the given marketplace for catchers? Okay, so let's say
maybe
around 15, Would you say $15 million for a first-starting
catcher? I don't
know.
I mean, Real Muto is making, I think, 17 a year. Is he as good a catcher as Real Muto?
I think that's a difficult question to answer. I think he because the value of every player is sort of dependent on the value to his respective team. And I guess you could make the argument, and if I were Wilson Contreras's representation and I'm going to the arbitration hearing, which is getting closer by the day, I would probably make that argument that he means more to the Cubs moving forward because, number one, okay, first of all, let's back up for a second. I am saying this on behalf of Wilson Contreras, predicated on the belief that I think he can be a catcher that you win with. I don't have as many doubts, but I'm also not there every day. I don't have as many doubts about his ability to receive and to frame and to handle a pitching staff, okay? The Cubs are telling us they do, or else this would not be an issue right now. But if I'm telling you what I think of Wilson Contreras' worth to this team, I'm looking at Caleb Killian. I'm looking at Justin Steele. I'm looking at Keegan Thompson. And I'm saying that the best way to help a young pitching staff is to have a veteran, dependable, solid, everyday catcher. And Wilson Contreras, frankly, has benefited from not catching every day this year. I'm valuing that, Bruce, and I'm locking that up because as the president of the Cubs, as you have just anointed me, I'm keeping my strength. I'm keeping my knowns known. I know Wilson Contreras is somebody I can count on. I'm not worried as much about budget because I have a payroll that's now about the middle of the pack, and I can spend more. And I'm going to do that to keep a player that means something to this organization and probably means more to us than it will to the team in free agency.
Let's go to that hotline, and maybe your friend Jack in Hillside, David, can help you, disseminate what this real situation is right now.
All right, the Score listener line is powered by BetQL. Bet smarter, beat the books. That's where we find Jack from Hillside. Good morning, Jack.
Good morning. Thank you, fellas. I agree with you completely, David, about Wilson Contreras and his value to the Sox. To the Cubs, rather, and I am the guy who wants to see him go to the South side. But, you know, I know that's not likely to happen. But what I'm wondering is this. What makes sense with the Cubs thinking? Do they overvalue or Miguel Amaya, their prospect? Do they rate him? I know he's injured right now. Do they think he is the Cub catcher of the future, and that's why they got Yan Gomes? He can catch for him even next year, and they're going to bring this guy up. And I'll say one thing that Cubs great for them, Contreras' value is sky high right now, and I expect the Yankees and the Angels both to be very interested and probably outbid anything my White Sox might offer for him at the trade deadline. Do you think they overvalue their catching too much, and that's why they don't want to sign Amaya?
Thanks, Jack. Thanks for listening and for the phone call. Bruce, I'll let you take a first stab at it.
What he says makes a lot of sense. I believe that Hoyer is in a position right now with this team that he has to listen to what would be a great offer for Contreras. Now, that said, it's only a few months of control. Okay, so if
right.
It's the Yankees, it's the Angels. Are you going to give three prospects for Contreras, and what grade level are they in reality that you're getting back for a guy that can help you, as you say, David, so well, develop your young pitchers and be there for a strength for them? We saw last year when Contreras wasn't catching the mess that it was behind the plate when they didn't have a Yan Gomes there to handle the professional situation. So there are a lot of different things that go into this decision. My thinking is that he'll be traded before July 31st.
Well, I think that is likely what's going to happen. Let's be very clear here. I'm not saying when I'm going on this Wilson Contreras rant what I think will happen. I'm mm-hmm. saying what I think should happen. They're two very different things. They're
right,
likely
but
to trade them.
If you're Hoyer, though, David, don't you have to say, you know what, we have to build for the future, and if we hear the right
fine.
Names,
fine.
You know, we're going to make that move.
Bruce, say that, because that this is the thing. We have spent this show already in this the context of the arc of our Cub conversation, talking about the possibility of pursuing Carlos Correa next offseason, other free agents to spend and increase their budget. You know what? If you believe that they can contend in 2023, tell me how it makes sense to get rid of a catcher who's all-star caliber like Wilson Contreras in 2022. It doesn't.
Your focus is a good one, and it's a strong one, and it's a strong conversation. But organizations don't talk about competing next year. Organizations talk about wanting to be good for a longer period of time than 1 year. And that's what Hoyer is saying here when he's going to arbitration with a guy in June and when they haven't agreed on a long-term contract. It's you know, apparent. You don't have to read between the words. It's apparent that he is going to get traded this year and that he's not going to sign a contract anytime soon to stay with the Chicago Cubs.
What comes with that, Bruce, and that is the scrutiny and the acceptance level that this is a rebuild, that this is telling your fans you're not being disingenuous about teasing them with the signing of Seiya Suzuki and Marcus Stroman and what those signings imply. You're saying that this is going to be something that we are starting from scratch again. And because it worked last time, believe in us, trust us, we'll do this again. But we're not hearing that. We're hearing about guys needing to stay tethered to reality, and the reality is we're just kind of figuring it out as we go along. I don't like that because it doesn't scream transparency.
David, he is being really great to the score. He's being great to your show with Mully. He's being great to Dan Bernstein, to Lawrence Holmes, to the guys in the afternoon show, because he's going to keep this rhetoric going, and it's a very good conversation for the next 2 months before he makes any trades of his veterans. Hey, the great unknown is, will Kyle Hendricks be traded at the deadline? Okay. That's even a bigger story than Contreras.
I mean, maybe, depending on how well he's pitching at the time, he means as much to this organization, I think, certainly historically.
Well, if you're talking about a rebuild, would say rebuild bigger than saying we're trading Hendricks for three young pitchers.
Well, I think trading Wilson Contreras would make an equally loud statement because of what he has meant and what he's capable of doing.
The difference is Hendricks has control. They have control of Hendricks for more than this year.
That is a stronger statement because of that contractual reality. I'll grant you that. But the big picture would be, if you're going to go in that direction, that's kind of what I'm saying. Embrace it. Announce it. Declare it. Because like they did last year, they kind of danced around the idea and the standings ended up telling them what to do. This year, there isn't that sort of luxury when you are the fifth worst team in baseball. I think everybody would understand that direction. Hendricks. Contreras. What about Marcus Stroman, Bruce? That's an affordable contract that you might want to shop and get some prospects in return. I know he just got here, but he might just be leaving if you go in that direction. You know, Jack asked about Miguel Amaya. I heard Jed Hoyer say earlier this week that hope is not a business plan. If you're hoping that Miguel Amaya is going to recover from Tommy John surgery in time to be your 2023 everyday catcher, good luck with that. Good luck with that. How long can you invest hope into this? So that's a future investment. Everything is about the future, and it goes beyond 2023. So just lean into it then. That's all I'm saying.
Look, all you had to do is look at the signing of Yan Gomes. Okay. They didn't sign him for 1 year. They signed him for 2 years. Did they have to sign Yan Gomes for 2 years to get him? Maybe. Or maybe not. Maybe the fact is that from the beginning – our eyes were wide open that there was a good chance that Wilson Contreras wouldn't be a part of the 2023 Chicago Cubs, and that is just the way it continues to look. Now, to Contreras' credit and to the Cubs' credit, Contreras has played really good baseball, has been there for everybody, has stood up, and to the credit of Hoyer and company, they said, we're recognizing that. He's being a true professional. He's given us everything he has. And maybe we do sit down and talk about an extension. Maybe he is the guy that we need him to be going forward. Maybe he can handle some more losing before we get good, okay? The message has to go to Contreras before it goes to the fan base, and then we'll know. But I don't think that's a complete story yet. I don't think it's a slam dunk that he gets traded. It appears that way. It's easy to look at it that way. But by the way, Hoyer talked about him Thursday, you know, looking at all these hurdles and passing him with, you know, with getting superior grades all the way across. They might change their mind, and Contreras might end up being a Cub.
Bruce, back before the Cubs began winning in 2015, I think it was pretty clear and evident and obvious to everybody who was paying attention that the strength and core of the next great Cub team at that time was within the position players, and the Chris Bryant coming up and Kyle Schwarber being drafted and Anthony Rizzo being traded for, and that core, and Javi Baez, et cetera, Addison Russell at the time. You knew that that core that you had assembled position-wise was going to be strong. What's the strength of the quote-unquote next great Cub team? Is it going to be starting pitching? Do you think that is that a bigger gamble than banking on all these prospects developing at their positions and offensively reaching their potential as the Cubs did with Bryant, Rizzo, Schwarber, et cetera? Do you think that it's riskier of a proposition when you're talking about starting pitchers who are so prone these days to injury?
Look, I'll answer that question in a roundabout way. Nobody wants to spend $300 million on a veteran pitching rotation unless you're the New York Yankees right now or the Los Angeles Dodgers, and they don't want to do it either. So the answer really is, look, we being Hoyer and Epstein, did it in an unconventional way. We signed and scouted and developed position players, and we spent over half of our budget every year, payroll-wise, on pitching, okay? And we got the best free agent pitchers out there that were available. And we won a World Series doing that, adding Lackey, adding Lester, being able to do that, you know, with the guys like Hendricks that they had developed. But more importantly, again, ending up with the veterans at the end, getting Chapman. So to me, the conventional is the way the Cubs are going to go, and that is, we've been hearing it for 2 years, pitching, more pitching, getting in their system, developing that pitching. You know, Carter Hawkins is the general manager of the Chicago Cubs. Mm-hmm. What was his claim to fame with the Cleveland Indians, David?
That he came from an organization that knows how to develop pitching, and that stands, you're seeing that again this year. That's a good point and connection.
And to Hoyer's credit, the organization's credit, they stepped outside of their comfort zone and hired somebody that was successful somewhere else that they had no knowledge of as an individual, did their homework, and brought in a guy that can help them take that step toward getting their next, you know, strong rotation, sign and develop a good pitching in the organization.
Bruce, we got to get to a break, but in 30 seconds, does Caleb Killian make his first start in this next stretch of games where the Cubs play 11 and 9 days?
Why not? He's doing everything they're asking him to at AAA. He has options left. You can bring him up for one start, or you can bring him up and start him the rest of the year, which would be ideal. I know you don't want to get him over his skis, but he's a 25-year-old pitcher who's shown that he has great stuff. I say bring him up, start him, and keep him in that rotation the rest of the year.
He's Bruce Levine. I'm David Haw, and we both have some chin music, our favorite segment coming up for a couple people on the South Side. You heard it this week, Ozzie versus TA. Who you got? Chicago Sports Radio, 670 The Score.
High and inside.
Time for some chin music.
Hey, Yomp, how about a warning?
Sure. Watch out you don't get killed.
Because sometimes in baseball, you've got to send a strong message, especially when someone has it coming. Each Saturday, David and Bruce come in high and tight with a response to something that deserves one, like this.
You know what I say? I need to say, I think we've babysitting players so much, I understand with Hosey, yes. But with T.A., I don't want to say T.A., you got to be Ozzie Guillen because Ozzie Guillen wish was T.A. But when you're young like that, play the game, you got to play every day.
And then I looked at the Royals lineup, okay?
Same guys.
Same guys. The only guy who did not play game two.
Because it was hurt.
Was hurt with Salvador Perez.
Welcome back. Chicago Sports Radio 670, The Score, Inside the Clubhouse. David Hall, Bruce Levine. That was Ozzie Guillen on the NBC Sports Chicago pregame show, postgame show. Both of them he does regularly with Chuck Garfine. Does a great job, Bruce. That created a little bit of stir because of not necessarily what Ozzie said was the controversial part, I thought, but the response from Tim Anderson, who tweeted after the game, which he did sit out, Ozzie needs to STFU sometimes, talk too much, exclamation point. Yeah, he needs to shut the front door, basically.
Oh.
Yeah. He clapped back a little bit, Bruce, and it created some controversy because it's Ozzie Guillen. He came on the next day on the morning show with Mully and I, and he said that he had a ton of respect for Tim Anderson. Of course he does. Ozzie wasn't wrong here. Ozzie's paid to analyze. Ozzie's opinion has credibility. Team Ozzie, sign me up.
You know whose opinion matters more than TA's or Ozzie's?
Who's that?
Tony La Russa's. Because he's the guy that makes out the lineup. And I haven't heard hardly anything talked about the fact that this was a manager's decision. It was based on the history of the player. It was based on what occurred last year. It's based on what they don't want to occur again. And that is, Tim Anderson has dealt with hamstring issues from being fatigued. And they lost him a couple of times last year because of these fatigue issues. And to play him in a doubleheader in this early in the year would have been an easy thing for La Russa to do, but probably the smart thing to do, even though they lost the game. And the reason they lost the game again was because Tim Anderson and because of center fielder Mr. Robert weren't carrying the offense like they've been doing all year. Okay.
Yeah.
You gotta lose. You gotta rest a guy, and you gotta lose honestly once in a while. And losing honestly in the early May or mid May is a really better idea than losing a player for 10 days and putting his legs in jeopardy again by playing a doubleheader.
All right, let me counter that because you're going low and away. This is called chin music. I'm coming high and tight because Tim Anderson's oversensitive here. I love Tim Anderson, and everybody does for the same reasons. He's charismatic. He's a leader. He is all those things. Change the game, hashtag, right? This is what we love about this guy. He's unorthodox in the way that he is candid. He interacts with fans. He's great, great, great for the South Side and everything he does for the city of Chicago. But he's a little sensitive here, Bruce. Come on. He made a bad situation worse, if you even want to call it a bad situation. Ozzie Guillen was calling out the manager. You're right. Ozzie Guillen's supposed to. That's what makes Ozzie Guillen a terrific analyst. That's why we love to watch him. He's must-watch television for Sox fans. He wasn't criticizing Tim Anderson. Yeah, you can say the hamstring. Bruce, they needed to win that game. Tony La Russa can't talk about every game managing like his last game and then look at a game against the Royals, a team you should beat, and you rest Anderson and Abreu in the same lineup on the heels of these Sunday lineups, which don't make any sense. I get where Ozzie was coming from. The term
David,
got
you're
him
right.
in trouble.
You are right. You know, what you say certainly resonates with me and should with other people, I think, out there. The fact that you cannot talk about wanting to win every game and start a lineup that you feel is not your best. But again, was that not the right decision to make? I say it was absolutely positively. If they would have won that game, no one would have said a word, okay? But the reality is that they have to protect their assets. And they know that Anderson is the most athletic player on the field, maybe in all of baseball at this point. Mm-hmm. And he also challenges himself by being too athletic at times and puts a lot of stress on those very valuable legs of his. And to rest him in the second game of a doubleheader is, in my mind, absolutely 100% the right thing to do, because the other players aren't carrying their load as far as the offense goes. Is no reason to step away from the fact that Anderson should not necessarily play a doubleheader in early to mid-May.
And I will maintain, and I will disagree with you vehemently, that when they handed in the lineup card for that doubleheader, that was might as well have been a Tony La Russa's concession speech for that game. They conceded. They conceded early on against a
team
nation
sweep.
You're not
going to win with one guy. If you're counting on one guy, David, you're not going to win. You're not
look
winning
at the next
anything.
2 days. Bruce, so you're in the camp who probably say,
yeah,
well,
next
you know
2 days.
Look,
guess what? He was pretty fresh. He was pretty fresh, wasn't he?
You can say that, and you will say that. Okay, but I'm going to go the other way. Ozzie woke him up. Ozzie Guillen woke up the White Sox. They finally responded to something that had to, on television. The sleepy clubhouse came alive because Ozzie called out the lineup card and the manager, and Tim Anderson felt slighted by that, and he overreacted. And then, you know what? Everyone's paying attention, maybe sitting up a little straighter, maybe a little more focused. That's why maybe the next couple games.
You know what woke up the White Sox next couple days?
What?
A less than superior Kansas City pitching staff.
Oh yeah,
and again,
maybe.
They did what they had to do against them. I give the players all the credit in the world, but to me, you know, the chin music here, it's not Ozzie, and it's not and it's not TA,
Bruce.
And it's TA standing up for his manager is what it is.
You just buzzed the tower with me, Bruce. A little high and tight there. You're coming after me. Oh, man.
It's Tony La Russa, you know, and in my opinion, the right thing to do, especially looking at the history of Tim's injuries to his hamstrings and not putting that on him this early in the year. To me, a good call, even though people will say, gee, it cost us a game. No, there were eight other guys in the lineup that didn't get it done that day.
It's fun to debate. Certainly, because that's what we do here. I am stunned, as that may be overstating it, mildly surprised. Tim Anderson, to my knowledge, Bruce, correct me if I'm wrong, has not been asked about this. I mean, this happened several days ago. He sat down with James Fegan of The Athletic and talked about Aroldis Chapman and the role velocity plays in today's Major League Baseball. I don't think he's been asked directly about why he reacted in the way he reacted at that moment, and I think that is something that is a missing piece to this story.
Yeah, I don't think they wanted to carry it on any further. I know the beat reporters and the White Sox.
The reporter covers the team. You do. You want to know.
Well, you want to know because you want to sell, you know, to listeners. You want to sell to different. You want to sell your newspapers or what's on your website. But you also work with these people every day for 162 games, and you do not want to poke the bear.
Bruce, you're pitching high and tight here. I just backed off the plate again. I mean, you're coming inside on me. You're bringing the
I'm
hard
stuff. I'm telling you what David. All I can do, maybe I'm not that smart. Maybe I'm I don't know a lot, but I can just tell you what I do know, and this is what happens on a beat. You know, you do not, when TA says that I'm not talking anything more about it, you don't ask him the question again. Okay. That's, you know, you're there 162 games. You're not a part of the team, but you have to get along with the team for the whole season.
I hear you. Okay. That's chin music this week. Next week, I can't wait for Bruce to come after me again with the inside high and tight fastball. So when we come back, we are hoping to reconnect with Rich King. We will talk to the legendary retired Chicago broadcaster about his book coming out and the White Sox here on Inside the Clubhouse. Chicago Sports Radio, 6-7 The Score.
We're back with more Inside the Clubhouse with Bruce Levine and David Haugh on Sports Radio 670 The Score and 670thescore.com. Presented by Bet Rivers Sportsbook.
Thanks for staying with us. Bruce Levine, David Haugh here until 11 o'clock talking baseball. Chicago Sports Radio 6-7 The Score. Now a pleasure to go out to our guest hotline presented by Circa Resort and Casino in Las Vegas, home of the world's largest sports book. That's where we find our good friend and former WGN broadcaster, Chicago media legend, Rich King. Good morning, Rich. How are you?
Good morning. How are you?
Doing well. We're talking White Sox. We're talking Cubs. Before we get to your next project, Rich, how would you describe the White Sox based on, we know that you have spent some time with them in spring training. You've done some work since retiring for the White Sox. How would you describe their season as they sit here at 19-19, ready for the Yankees today?
Well, I think they obviously disappointing, and they are expected obviously to do better in the early going. Being 500 teams is not where you want to be, but you know, they again, everybody has injuries, no excuses. But you think Lynn comes back and Moncada gets in gear, I still like them to win the division. Beyond that, of course, it's always a crapshoot in the playoffs. But it's not been what was supposed to be. Let's face it. I'm sure Jerry Reinsdorf and Tony and the rest of them were hoping for a better start. Having said that, you can't panic. It's early in the season, and you just hope things get together. The hitting has not been there, surprisingly. The team was supposed to hit. As long as you can't explain the early going, maybe when the weather gets warm, who knows. Well, you have to put an optimistic viewpoint on it if you're a White Sox fan. I hope that everything comes together here in the next couple of weeks.
Rich, pleasure having you on with us, and we're going to get to your book in just a second, but you were there in 1983 covering the White Sox, and you remember that year not starting off all that well until the All-Star break. Things changed a bit. What was the dynamic of that year and how White Sox baseball changed from the first half till that dominant second half where they won the division that season?
Well, everything comes together, Bruce. You have 05, you go back to 05. I mean, Jerry Reinsdorf, before the season, in fact, talking to Sam Smith, I don't think he expected, what they got in 05. They obviously they wanted to win, but everything came together, and, that's what it is. You've been around this game longer than me, and you have to get up every kind of break to win this thing. You need help, number one. You need guys, unexpected guys to come through. You need a lot of hitting, key hitting. It takes everybody gelling at the same time, and that's the optimistic viewpoint, because it doesn't matter what happens. It matters to a degree what happens in May, but the big thing is where you stand going into the playoffs. If you're healthy, if the things are clicking, look at the Marlins the year that they overtook the Cubs in that Bartman year. I mean, you never know. People get hot at the right time, and you drift into to a championship. So that's the dynamic you're looking for. And certainly all the elements are there for the White Sox. They should have the hitting. Jose Abreu is not hitting what he's supposed to be. Moncada was injured. Guys coming in slowly. Lynn got hurt. Giolito got hurt a little bit. So things didn't get off to a good start. Having said that, second half could be a totally different ballgame.
Rich, generations of Chicago sports fans grew up seeing you in front of the camera and in TV work with WBBM and WGN, and you became a broadcasting legend in the city. And so now people might not know you're a writer as well. And I think this is your third book you just completed. Tell us about that and what compelled you to sit down and put pen to paper, if you will. I know it's a computer and I know you're typing, but it sounds better saying pen to paper.
Well, all three of my books had some meaning to them, but I this last book, I didn't want to, people write when they retire, all ex-broadcasters, ex-anybody, writes a book about their career and all the great moments. So I thought I don't want to do that. I want to do something more meaningful. So I my camera guy, Richard Isaac, and I, let's call him Mike, we were together for 26 years. And I was raised in the 1950s in a very racist neighborhood. I was brainwashed into being a racist when I was a kid. I lost it, of course, when I got smart and got into college. But I thought that was juxtaposed the careers of Ike and me would be interesting. And I did that. I interviewed him. One chapter's on him, one chapter's on me. We became great friends. And it's a story of two guys, different backgrounds, but also had a lot of similarities. And we became friends, and really the race thing became a non-factor. We were in the road together for so many years, fighting obstacles, trying to get the job done, that we became just two guys, two friends. And I think that's what we're looking for in this country. We're looking for just people to get along and race not to be a factor. And that's the message of the book. To combine with that, though, in the book, I didn't want to make it totally a race thing, so I, I put some stories in there about the people we covered and some of the reporters and the athletes we covered. Now, we had access to these guys back in the 80s and the early 90s. It doesn't exist today. We had access to Michael Jordan, Walter Payton, Mike Ditka. We knew these guys. We knew the 85 Bears real well. They're almost the team friends of ours after retirement. So I combined that, the two elements, and wrote a book, which I think has a good message to it, but also was a lot of fun and some funny stories in there about what we went through in the years we covered the Chicago sports.
You know, Rich, you talk a little bit about the fact that you had relationships with these people and that your media career was about relationships. Talk a little bit about how different it was back then, reporting stories, and more importantly, maybe not reporting some stories.
Oh, Bruce, that's a great question. You know, I've had guys, Alan Bannister of the White Sox. When I did the radio in 1980, with the White Sox, you get to travel these guys, you get to know them, you become close to them. And Alan was just livid about something, about not getting a playing time, forget the issue. And he was telling me, I'm going to go on the media, I'm going to blast everybody. And I said, that's not a good idea. I said, it's not going to help your cause. He's a young guy. So you had relationships like that where you with these guys, and you try to give them some advice. And, you know, it'd be great to have the story, but on the other hand, it's not good for him. So, and he had access to, you were with these guys every day. And Michael Jordan is a good example, Walter Payton. Ike and I, we set up interviews, and the camera was off, and after we talked. And nowadays, as you well know, that doesn't exist. You can't get close to these players. And so I put a lot of stories in there in this book about incidents that happened off camera and some of the background. And I think in Michael's case, too, I think I got to know, you know, we got to know Michael pretty well. And not that we were friends with him, but we were on a one-to-one basis for a while. Walter, too, and Mike Ditka, all these guys were great personalities, and Ike and I were close to them. And so I thought it'd be nice to tell the fans, explain to the fans what they were really like in some of the cases, and some of the funny stuff that happened when they weren't on camera. So that's why many wrote the book. But it's a great point. You get to know these guys on a one-to-one basis. You can't be friends with them, but you can't be enemies either. We were not enemies of these guys.
Rich, 60 seconds before we let you go, but you weren't enemies. Just curious, though, in all your days, did you ever deal with a confrontation? How did you handle your worst confrontation with a Chicago athlete?
Well, I tell you, I had instances with Dave Kingman, who was a character in his own right, once told me he's going to not talk to me, and he had a shouting match with disagreement. And I try to tell him, look, man, I'm here just to report the news. Even Hawk Harrelson and I had a disagreement, and I told him, look, you can do what you want, but I'm here to report what I get. I was getting information on things and reporting on it when he was GM, and he didn't like it. So I had to go with my sources. So I tried to handle it in a professional way. I didn't go public with it. A guy threatened me. I didn't go public because I thought that was, nowadays probably guys would do that, but back then nobody did that. You took it and you just rolled with it, and we patched it up. I mean, Hawk and I patched it up, and Kingman and I didn't patch it up, but he drifted away. But it was you can't take it personally. I mean, these guys have opinions too, and you got to just ride with it. So to answer your question, I just tried to do the best I could, and I tried to smooth it over because I didn't want to be enemies of anybody. And most of the time I did. Thad Bosley jumped me for a couple of descriptions of a play he made, and we had a competition in the locker. Things like that happen. I'm sure you guys have it happen to you. But you try to do the best you can, remain professional, and try to smooth it over and get past it.
Rich, the book is called Ike and Me. It's by Rich King, and it's a very worthwhile book to pick up and read because it's going to tell you a lot of information about the inside of working in television and sports media in Chicago, and some great stories. And as you said, Rich, some really funny stories. Thanks so much for joining David and I. And, all the best to you. I'll try to get out to your little thing over at Guaranteed Rate today. You're a terrific guy. You've been a terrific friend all these years. So thanks so much from me and David, and all the best of luck to you, okay?
Thanks, Rich.
I appreciate you guys having me on, and David and Bruce. And ikeandme.com if you want to buy the book. And, of course, I hope you enjoy it.
That's Thanks Ike again, and Me. Rich. Thank you to Rich King, the Chicago broadcasting legend, Bruce. And, yeah, looking forward to reading that. Great to catch up with Rich, who was ever present for many years for generations of sports fans. Hey, we had a good show. It was a lot of fun. We have some people to thank. It begins with our producer, Cesar Perez, who was helpful in keeping us on time and in the right direction, even though we would veer off of it. Thank you to Brandon Hughes, the Cubs left-hander, and as well, and Rich King. And Bruce, thank you to you for lining up everything and keeping things steady in the boat, even if you came after me a couple times.
David, it's always a pleasure to come after you because we do it with a lot of respect and fun every week, every Saturday. People can follow me on Twitter at MLB Bruce Levine, also on our website, 670thescore.com, where I write about the Chicago Cubs and the White Sox. I will see you in a few weeks. We will be back next Saturday on Inside the Clubhouse, regardless.
Stay right here on the Score. Steve Rosenblum is next, and then Cubs pregame, 12:45. Zach Zaidman, Cubs and Diamondbacks. Listen Monday morning, Mully and Haw, beginning at 5 a.m. Thanks for listening. Inside the Clubhouse, Chicago Sports Radio, 670 The Score.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.
Protect your vehicle's engine with a full synthetic oil change and save with Mobil 1 at O'Reilly Auto Parts. Purchase 5 quarts of Mobil 1 full synthetic motor oil and receive a $10 O'Reilly gift card after rebate. See store for details. With your Mobil 1 purchase, you'll also receive 2x points during Old Rewards Bonus Points Month at O'Reilly Auto Parts.
O'Reilly.